ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Chapter 5 of the Vedanta Treatise is entitled as Exigency of Action. It is actually nothing but Chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita, which is Karma Yoga, the science of action. Our scriptures have always been emphasizing on action, but somehow people think when it comes to Vedanta, it emphasizes only on renunciation. It actually emphasizes on renunciation in action, not renunciation of action. So the importance of action is explained here in this topic, exigency of action. Exigency means there is an emergency to act. So much of information a person may have, but when it comes to executing the information, very, very poor execution. Like a centipede, you know, it has 100 feet. But it hardly moves. Very slowly it moves. Similarly, a lot of us have access to many scriptures, this and that, but when it comes to applying it in our life, we hardly do that. So, this is actually practical Vedanta. How to apply the philosophy in your day-to-day living so that you can achieve success and prosperity in the external world as well as achieve mental peace. Calmness within and have harmony around you. That is only possible when you understand Vedanta and live it. So he says you got to follow the example of the river. River constantly flows. As a result, there is life. You can produce electricity. When the water is stagnant, it slowly starts evaporating and starts giving foul smell. Life becomes extinct. Similarly, you've got to constantly be moving. You've got to be constantly acting. In the Bhagavad Gita is there, Nahi kashchit kshanamapi jatu tishtatya karmakrit karyate shavashat karma sarva prakriti jayi gunaihi. None can remain without action even for a moment. Everyone will be forced to do action by their vasanas. So now, since you will have to act anyway, you should know how to act. Because one set of people do not act. They remain inactive. Other set of people act impulsively. Hardly anybody who is actually doing the right action. So therefore he talks about it here. He says, you must follow the example of the river. You must constantly engage yourself in action. There's a very interesting English quotation it says, if you rest, you will rust. What has to be at rest is your mind, not your body. What we are doing is, we are keeping the body in rest and the mind is constantly in action, tremendously agitated. You are not able to be peaceful. You are restless within. So therefore he says, your body should plunge into action, your mind should be in rest. And what is creating the unrest in the mind? It is the selfishness and ego. It is the I. So therefore, through the knowledge, you remove the I and then simply execute the action. So this, he says here, the idea of working in the spirit of renunciation has confused people. And Vedanta says, renunciation in action, what it means is, you renounce the egoistic attitude, egocentric desires. You renounce the temptations to act on likes and dislikes. And you do what you ought to do. Unnecessarily don't emphasize on the doer. Be concerned about what is to be done. It really doesn't matter who is doing it. So when you understand that, it won't be any big problem for you to execute action in the spirit of Karma Yoga. But the problem is nobody understands it correctly. So this is exactly what Sri Krishna told Arjuna also. When Arjuna wanted to leave the battlefield, you know, Arjuna wanted to leave the battlefield. He said, I will not fight. Sri Krishna said, what you have to leave is not the action, the doership. When you leave the action, if you leave the action like Siddhartha, who ultimately finally became Gautama Buddha, when he left the action, he also simultaneously left the doership. So the problem is, like when you have a, you know, argument with your spouse or children or a close friend, and the argument goes a little serious, ego starts getting involved there, then what happens is you stop talking to each other. Let him talk to me first. Let her talk to me first. But you're expecting the others to talk and the conversation to continue. But you do not want to stop. So there is action that is stopped, but ego is very much prevalent. That is going to cause sin. What Sri Krishna says is, you do the action, but there is no ego, like a child. Do it innocently. Dissolving the ego through the knowledge. Such an action will be highly productive because you are not at all thinking about yourself, the results, nothing while doing the action. So, highly productive it will be. And also, you won't be creating vasanas, fresh vasanas. The existing vasanas also will get exhausted. So you will be growing spiritually as well as materially. This is what he talks about in the Bhagavad Gita as true action. So you got to renounce the selfishness, renounce the egoism, renounce the doership, not the action. You find it relatively easy to drop the action. Dropping egoism is not easy. Whatever small little action you may do, you might also know that it is small, but you still feel if it has some recognition, it will be good. The entire universe is quietly managed. And whoever is the manager, you call him God, you call him Ishvara, whatever you want to call, or nature, Yogya, quietly doing it, not making the presence known. And we do small little stuff here and there, and then we want recognition for it. That's what is creating mental disturbance, not the work. So therefore he says you must understand the importance of action. So in the next topic he talks about the value of action. In fact, in the book Governing Business and Relationship, if you see there is a topic where he talks about various values. In that, one of the values he will talk about is action. You should start valuing action. You know, in the academy, Swamiji is averse to certain words. One of the words that he really is very much averse is meeting. And you say, let's have a meeting. But everything and everything, let's have a meeting. Let's have a meeting. And then, so much time is wasted mostly. It's not that when I said he's averse to meeting, it's not that once in a while when it's important, you need to have a meeting, it's fine. But then every day, meeting, you get lost. Don't do the work. Not at the cost of action. So you must have the value of action. When you have the wisdom, it will immediately express itself as action. The proof of your wisdom is in your action. Nothing else. You can talk as much as you want. You may be having a tremendous following also. But the proof of your knowledge is your life. How you live. Continue. Topic, value of action. Who wants to read? Avanti, you want to read? Shweta doesn't have the book.
Yeah.
Are you there, Avanti? Or Anu, one of you read? Hello.
I'm not being able to unmute this. Can you hear me for a
Yes,
second?
I can hear you.
Okay. Shall I read?
Yes, please.
Via action is inevitable.
No. Yeah, that value of action.
Sorry, page 89.
Topic value of action.
Value of action. Page 92, Avanti. Okay, thanks. Human beings must keep pace with the march of time if they are to survive in the struggle for existence. Mere acquisition of knowledge would not suffice. Knowledge comes from the past. It has to be translated currently into action. Thoughts and ideas must be transformed into deeds.
So this is the most important lesson we got to learn. How to convert your ideas into action. And you got to adapt yourself to the present time. Even if the Vedanta sessions have to survive, we have to adapt to the current situation. You know, during Corona, we have to switch on to this online platform. And again, when we do Vedanta sessions and all that, we try to give some PowerPoint presentation, etc. These are all requirements. I'm just giving this broad example to make you understand what he's trying to say. You must keep pace with time. Time is not going to keep pace with you. It's not going to say, okay, this fellow is taking a little time, let me wait. Slowly, slowly, artificial intelligence, what all is coming. So you've got to be in the present moment. Do not compromise on the principles. Don't have to compromise on the principles, but adapt to the modern times and then continue. That is very book Vedanta treatise. It's in that direction. Because many times even Swamiji has mentioned it, that nothing in the book is mine, he says. It's true. Like I said, this chapter is chapter 3, Karma Yoga, Bhagavad Gita. And I can show you many places where it is all from Swami Ramtirtha's complete works. And then there are many other texts like Upanishads, Vajagovindam, Bhagavad Gita, Atmabodha, you know, so many scriptures from which he has taken, and his main contribution as far as this book goes is putting it in the proper thought flow with modern examples. And he keeps on editing. If you see the book, how many times he's edited, keeps on adding new examples. You know, that will resonate with the youngsters, the modern times. Many things he has constantly been adding. Certain things he's removed also. But not, the idea is there, but certain, maybe a few examples he's removed, few stories he's removed, something like that. So, this is based on what he's saying. You've got to constantly keep pace with time. You're running business. You got to keep pace with time. If you don't, you will become extinct. Time is not going to wait for you. So therefore, he said, knowledge comes from the past. You've got to reflect over it and adapt it to your life. You know, see, sometimes these management gurus from abroad, especially from the West, they have written many books and all are bestsellers, and then they come and give lectures, and then they come for a seminar here, house full. They come and give certain ideas. Many of the ideas, not necessary as it is, it will work in India. Might work for their country. But in your country, you might have to do certain changes. But in the seminar, when they talk, they only talk from that level. But when you approach them individually, maybe they'll tell you how you can convert it to your present context. That's what he's trying to say here. It has to be translated currently into action. Thoughts and ideas must be transformed into deeds. Continue.
Your motto in life should be to strive, to struggle, not to succeed. Work well accomplished is the joy of life. Success or failure is immaterial. What really matters in life is your ability to adopt action to obligation. Your business lies in action alone, not in the reward accruing from it. Let not the anxiety for enjoying the fruit disturb the course of your action.
This is nothing but verse number 5, sorry, verse number 1, chapter 6. Chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, what he says is, put it here. Anashrita karma phalam karyam karma karoti yaha. Saha sanyasi saha yogi. Na niragnirna chakriya. That is what it is. Your motto in life should be to strive in the present, struggle in the present, not to succeed, meaning not mentally sit and be anxious about the result. That's what it means. You can plan in the present for the future. It's a present action guided by the intellect. When you plan for the future in the present, it is a present action guided by the intellect, by your intellect. Similarly, you can learn from the past, which again is an action guided by your intellect. In the present, you do that action. You learn from the past using your intellect in the present. You plan for the future guided by the intellect in the present. Once having done that, you got to plunge into action in the present, which is what he means by saying strive, struggle, put yourself in the struggle, action. And while doing the action, do not be unnecessarily anxious about the future. You should not be anxious of the future while doing the action, is what he means by saying the motto in life should be to strive, to struggle, not to succeed. So, when you do the action with full focus, full attention, when you pay complete attention and do the action, the attention is not drifted towards the I, whether somebody will appreciate me, will I get rewards, what is the material benefit I'm going to get out of it, none of those thoughts. You are fully immersed in doing the action. You did it with tremendous love. Ego is absent. That is the real joy. Work well accomplished is the joy of life. Now, work well accomplished, somebody may do it much better than you, maybe. Or somebody else's work probably was selected, not yours. That's not in your hands. The result is not in your hands. Right? You can only do your bit. Result is not in your hands. So therefore, either success or failure is inevitable. In fact, a person who focuses fully in the action, resolves the ego in the action, is doing yajna. In yajna, what is happening? There is ghee or grain that is being offered into the fire. And the fire shoots up and blesses the individual who is offering the grains. Similarly, you are offering the ego. And when you are offered the ego, your talents, whatever your skill, whatever it may be, flows freely with no obstacle there. You know, all the sportsmen, they are training tremendously. But when it comes to executing, when they get involved, when the mind starts taking over, the ego starts taking over, they cannot function properly. Not that they lack the talent, but if they can control themselves and then execute their actions, they'll shine. You know. So therefore, he says, work well accomplished is the joy of life. Success or failure is immaterial. Don't worry about how the world views you. Successful or a failure. You are a successful person because you've been focusing in giving your best. What really matters in life is your ability to adopt action to obligation. This is another very important statement, you know, that Swamiji makes here. He says, what really matters in life is your ability to adopt action to obligation. See, how do you determine what is your obligation? Anybody? What are all the factors that goes in determining your obligation?
Who you are determines a lot of your responsibilities. Like as a parent, what is your responsibility? As a if you are an employer or an employee, what is your responsibility? So who you are as a person determines your responsibility.
Correct. That is one very important factor. Your role determines your responsibility, your obligation. As a parent, you have an obligation. As a daughter, son, you have an obligation. As a citizen, you have an obligation. Correct. Your role. Then, what else? What are the other factors? Any other factors?
Maybe one could be that it is about yourself.
In the sense?
How are you living your daily life or your pursuing your actions and all that?
Obligation to the world, obligation to how you interact with each other, the society, the world, the earth.
See, your obligations other than the role, from different angles when you view, one of the factors that determine your obligation is in the areas where you have taken, you have an obligation to pay back. Now, the person who gave it to you should not have the expectation of you giving it back. Then it is good for that person. But in whichever area, now when Amit you said nation, why do you say you have an obligation to the nation as a citizen? Because you have taken from that society, from that country. So you have an obligation to give it back to the country. Similarly, world. Similarly, your teachers, your parents, your institution. You have an obligation towards all the schools and colleges, but towards your, particularly towards your school, your college, more than the other. You know? So, the area where you have received, you have an obligation to give, to pay back, not money, pay back the sense with whatever, you know. You have an obligation. Similarly, you have obligation to the nature. You are constantly, we are taking. So we have an obligation. You know, when you book the flight tickets online, there will be a question asked. Would you like to contribute to the carbon deposit thing, you know, by planting trees and all that? So, okay, let me contribute towards that. Or what are you doing about, you know, the nature? You have an obligation. Another important factor that determines your obligation is your goal. That's a very, very important factor that determines your obligation. The goal. All the actions that I am supposed to do to get to that goal becomes my obligation. Another important factor is your own nature. What is your nature? In the nature, you have been created with a particular nature. You have to contribute to the totality by developing that talent or nature, whatever, and constantly contribute to the society through that. So all these areas, we can kind of understand that we have obligation through these factors. Now, once that is determined as to what are my obligations. So similarly, when I have to do that, when I have to achieve that goal, I have to do this role, that role, then I have to do that through my body only. So it's my obligation to take care of my body. So I have to take care of my sleep, I have to take care of my exercises, I have to take care of my diet, I have to take care of everything. That's my obligation. I have an obligation towards myself, my own body, similarly my mind. I need to spend some time on a daily basis exercising my mind to keep it strong. Every day I got to visit my mind and see if there is any negative emotions that is coming. And you got to get rid of those negative emotions. So you have an obligation from that angle as well. So, obligations, body level, mind level, intellect level also. Then he says, you should have the ability to adopt action to obligation. Otherwise, there are a lot of obligatory duties that you are supposed to perform. But your mind is saying, something or the other. There is no appreciation for this. Why you want to do this? Something or the other the mind says. And then you give in to the mind. Which means what? You are not adopting your action to obligation. You get easily diverted into so many other things. That's how many people live. They're not able to bring in their actions in focus. There's a topic on which we lecture. It's called life in focus. If you can bring your life in focus, you can be successful, peaceful, everything. But that's the most difficult thing. What really matters in life is your ability to adopt action to obligation. Simply everybody is doing so many other things which are not their obligation at all. You have an obligation to go and work in the company. You are going on the way, you see some circus going on. And then you go into the circus and you get involved there. This is what is happening to all of us. Constantly. Then he says, your business lies in action alone, not in the reward accruing from it. Karmaniye vadhikaraste mahabaleshu kadachan. That shloka, which is in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Karmaniye vadhikaraste mahabaleshu kadachan. Verse 47. Let not the anxiety for enjoying the fruit disturb the course of your action. See, the planning and all that should be done before plunging into action. Once you have plunged into action, don't worry about the result. To the extent your mind's energy has been diverted, dissipated into the unproductive channel of the future result, to that extent your action will not be done completely. Therefore, it will be lacking something or the other. You won't get the wanted result. That's why he says, let there be no anxiety. Enjoying the fruit of action. Karmaniye vadhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phalayetu boho ma te sangosva karma. Don't give in to inaction either. These are all shloka from verse number 1, chapter 6, verse number 47, chapter 2. So many shlokas, all that. What he's done is, like he said in the first paragraph, he's put it in English language, giving modern examples, quotations, following the fundamental principle of education, which is to move from the known to the unknown. That's what he's doing. Nothing else. So when you function like that, you are a mature person. You are a knowledgeable person. You are converting the wisdom into action. You are living practical wisdom. Consider. Want to continue?
Just be in the struggle that becomes your bounden duty. Work on for work's sake. Learn to be indifferent towards pleasure or pain, joy or sorrow, honor or dishonor that may occur out of your action. Your life is enriched by accomplishment of right action rather than outward success or failure. Take up your work with no axe to grind. Do what you ought to do in life. Go about it in an independent spirit. Work then becomes a pleasure. Pleasure or happiness lies in the garb of work.
See, this is verse number 38, chapter 2. Sukha dukhe same kritwa labha labho jaya jayo. It goes on, Bhagavad Gita. Just be in the struggle Don't worry about the pleasure or any benefit that comes out of it. Labha, alabha. Sukha, dukkha. Sukha means pleasure, dukkha means pain. Labha means profit, alabha means loss. Jaya, ajaya. Victory, defeat. Sukha, dukkhe, same kritva. Labha, labhau, jaya, jaya. Tato, yuddhaya, yujyasva. Then get on to the battle. See, when you do an action out of love or out of gratitude, you are not looking in terms of what I can get from that action. So, you are going to give. That's it. In the process, there may be certain difficulties that you might have to face. But you willingly do that. In fact, since your attitude is not a labor attitude, since your attitude is love there, it's love, not labor that takes you to work. Swami Vivekananda gives a very interesting example. He says, for example, if you have to carry some luggage from one place to another on your back, you will feel the burden, yeah, so much heavy it is. When will I get there? When will I get there? How many more kilometers I have to walk? You know, like that. But on emergency, when there is no ambulance available, your son is going through some trouble, you have to take him to the hospital, and he weighs some 20 kilos, and you have to carry him on your back and walk a few kilometers. You are walking so many kilometers, physical burden is there, but the mental burden you don't feel. Because you are doing it out of love. With the sense of responsibility and obligation in which the I is completely dissolved. Such action cannot tire you. That's what he means by saying, take up the work with no axe to grind. Now, in the context of working as an employee in an organization, what we say is, listen, whatever the discussions, all that has happened already. How much salary, negotiation, ogya with the department. Now, having done that, you keep aside all the salary, everything from your mind. Just do the work. Give your skill, your nature to the best of your ability to the organization. Let the salary be a byproduct. That attitude, that's what he's talking about. Learn to be indifferent towards pleasure, pain, joy, sorrow, honor, dishonor that may accrue out of your action. People may praise you, people may criticize you. Sometimes you may not get any recognition during your lifetime. After 2-3 generations, maybe some people, but you are not there. It doesn't really matter. That's what he's saying. Your life is enriched by accomplishment of right action rather than outward success or fame. We are temporary. This is permanent. Take up your work with no axe to grind. Do what you ought to do in life. Go about in an independent spirit. Work then becomes a pleasure. Pleasure or happiness lies in the garb of work. I think I've given this example before. You know, somebody told me that, what is the kingdom? The prince of that particular kingdom wanted to learn soccer many years ago. Forgetting the name of the kingdom. That fellow wanted to learn soccer, the prince. He was only some 8 years or 10 years old. I believe the king brought the best player from Brazil. I think Zico or somebody he brought. To coach him. And this fellow is learning to play soccer. Is he trying to make a living out of the, you know, sport? He can buy so many sports clubs if he wants. But he's so much interested in the particular sport. So he just wanted to learn it and play it. Enjoy it. Exactly like that, whatever may be your talent, dancing, playing, singing, talking, whatever it may be. You exhibit that with the attitude of giving, out of love, out of gratitude. And you'll be enjoying singing, dancing, because that's your nature as well. And that, in such activity, there is pleasure, happiness, everything. That's what he says, pleasure or happiness lies in the garb of work. Again, there is another interesting episode apparently happened between Tansen and Akbar. Akbar asked Tansen, I believe, is there anyone better singer than you? He said, of course, a guru, Haridas ji, far, far superior. And he said, why don't you bring him to the court? We would like to listen to him. He said, he won't come here, we have to go there. If you want to listen to him, we have to go where he is. Akbar said, yes, let's go. They both went there, and from distance they saw Haridas ji sitting. And Tansen said, let's wait here. Really, let's go and ask him not to sing. No, no, he will not sing. It's because you ask him. When he sings, you listen. And after some time, when out of some inspiration he sang, Akbar was completely mesmerized. He said, yes, Tansen, you are right. He is far superior compared to you. You are nothing. How is this possible? He asked. He said, I am singing for an emperor here like you. He is singing for the emperor, the whole world. In the sense, he is not selling himself for anything. We are all selling Jesus Christ within the self or something or the other. Looking for something we do. That's why we don't enjoy. Do it for fun, you enjoy. Keep aside the survival thing that the ego and intellect brings in. What will happen? What will happen? What will happen? What will happen? He who made it knew what it needed better than a man like me. Says that poem, Olive Tree. What will happen? What will happen? All the time concerned. So you don't enjoy. Forget about it. Work, work, work. No other thought. Then the ego is dissolved. The fact that there is no ego, you will be in ecstasy. The I that comes in destroys it. You've got to somehow rise above the I. Continue.
People do not realize the beauty and grandeur of real work. They entertain worldly motives to work, develop desires and become attached to the objects of their desires. While trying to fulfill desires, they crave for fruits of their action. In doing so, they pitch up and pursue self-imposed duties tirelessly and become bound by them. The result of their labor is suffering and sorrow in their lives. Instead, gain freedom and happiness. Cast off all selfish desire and worldly motives appended to your action. Render your work sacred. Surrender to the total plan of nature. They will be done should
thy,
be...
Thy will be done.
Thy will be done should be your attitude to work. Not my will be done. Your selfish desires and clingings render your business and life mundane. Work without attachment and craving is worship. That is the principle of renunciation. Why have any motive for work? Work itself is most rewarding, entertaining, blissful. Employ this simple principle of work in practical life. The wide world becomes your temple. All your activities become one divine chant. When you thus begin to work in a spirit of renunciation, the world returns your courtesy. Wealth and prosperity are at your door. That is the law.
See, this is the complete karma yoga that he's talking about. Without understanding this technique of losing yourself while doing the action. People take up action with certain motives. And that motives burden, it's not the action. So because of this confusion, what we are doing is, oh my God, my actions are giving me stress. So what do? Take off. 1 week leave. 10 days. Go to some spa. Go to some vacation place. Do, you know, this diving, that diving. You want to go there to do all that, enjoy, that is different. But not with an idea that weekends I will be happy. Everybody looking forward for TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. In the academy we say TGIM. Thank God it's Monday. In the sense, work is an excuse to lose your ego. You know, then you just enjoy and the body becomes tired. Without your knowledge, you will fall out to sleep. Like a child, you know. On, suddenly keeps on playing. Suddenly, within a fraction of a second, sleeping. Because the body has become tired. Nicely sleeps with no worries, no anxiety, nothing. Then again tomorrow, so much energy. We do not have that kind of energy. Why? Because the mind, ye karna, wo karna, this has to be achieved, that has to be done. Isko bulana, ye wo jayega, wo jayega. Constantly, that is what he is trying to say by saying they entertain worldly motives to their work. Work then becomes a means. When work becomes a means to achieve something, then you are there, the I is there. Through that I want to accomplish something. When I come to meet you, I'm coming to meet you with an agenda. It's like that. I just wanted to meet you out of love. Let's have a cup of tea. That thing. Achha, okay. Chalo, ab to bolo. Kyun aaya? Genuinely I came just to say hello to you. They will not believe that. If such a thing happens in life. Because in today's context, if you see, something or other you want. 15, 20 minutes, you will talk and then, something, you know. So that's what he's saying. That, then you do not want anything. Like Sudama. Exactly what he's talking about is Sudama's example.
Wasn't Sudama also sent by his wife that, oh, you have such
in the story, his wife was constantly, you know, nagging him. Go. He didn't go because he said, okay, this is a good excuse to meet my friend. He forgot. He didn't even talk to him about for what he came. He just goes and Krishna asks, what did you bring for me? So, it was an excuse from Sudama's point of view. Of course, his wife was torturing. That is a different thing. It is from the wife's side.
But to go meet a friend, and if there is something, is it wrong?
An excuse for him to go and meet his friend. If he wanted to go, he would have gone many years ago.
No,
so he would have gone many, many years ago. Both of them were spending time in Sandipani Ashram together. They were doing sadhana together in Sandipani Ashram. He could have sent sent a text message. I'm suffering. He never contacted him. Never. Never ever. He knows. Without him telling how his wife knows that Krishna is his friend. He never ever wanted anything from Krishna. He never asked anything from Krishna. Well, as if you see the story, the torture was so much, he said, okay, let me go. But he didn't ask. Even when he went, it's not out of ego he did not ask. That's a different thing. There are people who do not want to ask for a ego. See, when we talk about this, these are little deeper things we need to understand. There was a Swami, apparently, anyone who goes to him and then they prostrate to him and they take leave from him, they say, give me one rupee. What is this fellow here? He is living a simple life. He doesn't want anything actually. He has this habit, give me one rupee. He'll take 1 rupee from everybody. As though he's going to build a house from that 1 rupee. He seems to be a taker outwardly, but inwardly he is a giver. You do not want to part. He wants you to get rid of that habit of not wanting to part. And when you part, everything opens up. Is what Jesus Christ also says. Knock and it shall be given. Knock and it shall be opened. Seek and it shall be given. You've got to knock the door of Supreme. You've got to surrender your ego to the Supreme. What brought you will give you. That doesn't mean what brought me will give me and then I sit and do nothing. That is not what he's talking about here. You continue doing what your obligation is. What you have to pay back to the society through your nature. With no intention of taking anything, wanting anything. When you function like that, like he said, you know, the world returns your courtesy. Wealth and prosperity will be at your door. That's exactly what happened to Sudama. It's not out of ego that he did not ask. No. He has no ego to ask. He has no ego not to ask. Nothing like that. He just then was with his friend, had good time with his friend, came out. He came out, he was surprised. Everything has changed. That's what the story says. So, when you lose your little self, sacrificing for the higher, this is the symbolism of Jesus Christ's crucifixion. Understand? Jesus Christ was crucified. What is the symbolism? Symbolism is what? When you go and light a candle, what is the symbolism? When you light a lamp, what is the symbolism? Wick is burning itself to give light to everybody. So, soaking itself in the oil of devotion. Allowing the knowledge, the fire to burn it. When you burn the ego with the knowledge of the higher, soaking your personality in the oil of devotion. As your ego is being burned, you will be giving light to everybody. And everybody will be worshipping you. Worshipping the divinity in your presence. So, that's exactly what he's talking about. To live like that. It's the ego that has to be sacrificed. Nothing else. There are people, see on the contrary, I gave the story of the Swami who took one rupee, but he was a giver. There may be people who are giving, but thinking that I am giving. It is a totality that is giving through you. If I am sitting and talking today, it is the knowledge that is given by my guru and given by many, many gurus. The guru parampara, only when my ego comes in between some stupid things I say. So, the point that we need to understand here is, things are coming through you, given through you. When you understand that, then you are doing charity without ego. Otherwise, you are giving. Kitna dena, bolo bolo, I will give. As if you are giving. Who is giving through you? You sit and think, you'll understand that. Why should I have this ego? So there may be people who are giving, but takers. But there are people who are takers, but they are givers. Both, externally when you see they are taking, they are not taking. They have no problem. And somewhere I read this story, I don't know how far it is true. Mother Teresa, she had gone to somebody, she was told that, you know, he is a great philanthropist. So she went to ask, she was serving the, what do you call this, people suffering from leprosy and all. So she said, okay, we need funds to take care of them. So she went to the so-called philanthropist. And apparently, the gentleman, I don't know in what context it was, he spit on us. Come to ask money. He spit on us. On her face. She just wiped it and said, "This you have given for me, now please give something for the cause." So when such a thing that the fellow heard, he then melted and said, "Sorry." He then apparently was, you know, helpful for the cause, I believe. The story somewhere I read. So then she is asking, is he asking? He is a giver. You know, as per the story, if you see, is she asking? Outwardly it looks like she is asking. And there are so-called people giving. Are they real givers? They are takers. It's an investment. In some for something or the other. You know? So we should not go with the external actions. For that I am explaining all this. So Sudama was never a taker. He cannot. See, anybody, forget Sudama. Anybody who has got knowledge cannot take. It's not out of ego. Their taking also, external physical taking, will also be out of the action of giving on. It's impossible. Once the knowledge has gone in, to whatever extent it has gone in, to whomever it may be, thereof you cannot be a taker. In any relationship also, you will let go. All that cannot, it's not possible. It's only possible if knowledge is not. So, Rama and Sri Krishna both were doing sadhana in the ashram of Sandipan. They are highly knowledgeable people. In poverty, Sudama was happy. In wealth, in richness, Sri Krishna was happy. Because their happiness was not coming from poverty, nor is it coming from richness. It is coming from within. From inside, Sudama never felt his poor. His wife and everybody, yes, of course, as per the story. So, pleasure is in the garb of doing your work, dissolving the ego. For that reason, I was explaining all this. Whatever you do, it doesn't matter what you do. Yat karoshi yadashnasi ejjuhoshi dadasi yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat purushvam adharpanam. Just do it. Like the Nike slogan. Just do it. Don't worry. Oh, what will happen? You are doing Ishwara Seva. It's an opportunity for you to do that same. Do that and get out. What took care of you when you were in your mother's womb? What is taking care of you now? Gravitational force is functioning. Oxygen supply is coming. That divinity will never forsake you. It's always there taking care of you, right? So why should you be concerned? So he says, therefore, pleasure, happiness, they're all in the garb of work. Wealth and prosperity will be at your door if you function like this. Continue.
Remember, work is your creation. You impose duties upon yourself, but you are the ultimate master. Duty need not lord over you. You are your own lord. Not realizing this, you turn pale at the thought of duty. Become a mere machine of duty and get into a fever of doing, hurrying and worrying all the time. Impassioned by your responsibilities in life, duties and responsibilities threaten you, harass you day in and day out. You have created a Frankenstein of duty. This is ridiculous. Remember, your self-imposed duties and responsibilities are not indispensable. The world can take care of itself. It does not need your help. Nor does it wait for your condescension. The world will go on and on. Nevertheless, work must you perform. You ought to take to work as a prince takes to sport. Not as a drudgery or burden. Your life is one big game, full of fun and frolic. The most laborious undertaking pursued in the right spirit is found to be all play. Intense work undertaken thus is no work at all. That should be your attitude to work.
See, when we keep on talking about obligation, 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 that should not become a burden on you. So he says, like, you know, in that movie, it shows Frankenstein is created by this fellow to destroy the enemies. But the Frankenstein turns towards him. Similarly, you created the work. But the work should not become a burden and threaten your life. Oh, I've been wanting to come to you, wanting to come and see you, not being able to work. Kya kare? If you genuinely, if you're genuinely wanting to go somewhere, and last 10 years, 20 years, you're trying, you're saying, and you could not go, and then blame the work for it. It means you are attached. It means work is not done for the sake of work. There's something you're expecting through that work, not able to let go. 2 minutes if I leave the kushi and go, somebody else will come and say, Baba, I don't want to leave it and go. Huh? Okay, let them come and sit. A stone that is fit for the wall would not be found on the way. You should have, you know, such, the strength comes when you really understand these statements. You really worthy of something. How can anybody take it away from you? Not possible. A stone that is fit for the wall would not be found on the way. So why would you be attached to work or sit? Seat or anything for that matter. Take it. So that is what he's talking about. That spirit of renunciation has to all along come with you. That happiness is in that only. Happiness is not in per se in the action or in the outcome. It's in the spirit which is there in the action. So not knowing this, people think if they get rid of action, they'll be happy. Are you get rid of action, but so much ego you have. Again with that ego, you get back to action. Obviously, stress will come back. So you think it's coming back because you again started working. Not because you are starting work. It's because you are continuing with that egoistic attitude. That's all he's saying. Continue, please.
Action performed in a spirit of detachment leads you to the state of perfection, to realization of your supreme self. Ironically, the scripture defines self-realization as the state of actionlessness, a state transcending all action. Actionlessness cannot be gained by merely renouncing actions, but by acting in a spirit of renunciation. You will have to plow through action to transcend action. Use the word to transcend the world, just as you use a thorn to remove a thorn embedded in your flesh. Hence, act on in the world with your mind fixed on the self. You are bound to reach that supreme state.
So, when you function this way, not only you will achieve material success, prosperity, peace, you will also be getting rid of vasanas. And when you get rid of the vasanas completely, you realize the self. You become one with the self. That state is what, in the scriptures, they call it as Naishkarmiya Siddhi. Naishkarmiya Siddhi means actionless. Actionlessness does not mean being inactive. To understand actionlessness, you should understand the chronology of action. That is why he gives the next topic, chronology of action. The chronology of action is a very important topic. I know for every topic I'll be saying this, but chronology of action really, I'm telling you, is a very important basic we need to understand. How does the action spring? From where the action comes. So he talks about that. Action comes from desires. Desires come from thought. Thought comes from vasanas. So when you say actionlessness means desirelessness. Desirelessness means thoughtlessness. Thoughtlessness means vasanalessness. Actionlessness does not mean being idle. No. It is being vasanalessness. Man minus desire equals God. God plus desires equals human beings. Human beings minus vasanas is God. So to get rid of the vasanas, got to follow action in the spirit of renunciation. That is what he's
talking about. What is the difference between desires and vasanas then? The same, no?
They're not
desireless same. Or vasanaless, no?
Desire means
less.
Manifested vasana. Vasana is unmanifest desire.
Okay, okay, yes, okay.
We will study this in detail next week in chronology of action. But to answer your question, desire is manifested vasana. Vasana is unmanifest desire.
Yeah, understood.
Let's conclude now. Om Purnamadha Purnamidham Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Buddhyatmana Va Prakrute Swabhavat Karomi Adyat Sakalam Parasmahi Narayana Yeti Samarpayami.